You're listening to Radio MD. She's a chiropractic, holistic physician, best-selling author, international speaker, entrepreneur, and talk show host. She's Dr. Suzanne Bennett. It's time now for Wellness for Life Radio. Here's Dr. Suzanne.
So excited for today's show. We have one of the most brilliant person in the and pioneer in the world of integrative functional medicine. He has more than 40 years of experience contributing to molecular biology and clinical diagnostics. His name is Dr. Russell Jaffe, and the founder and chairman of PERC Integrative Health. This is a company that offers scientifically proven integrative health solutions to speed the transition from sick care to healthful caring. Thanks so much for joining us, Dr. Jaffe.
Thanks for the invitation.
Oh, you bet, you bet. You know what? I'd love to hear about how you, radically transitioned from conventional medicine while you were at the NIH, where you are today. I mean, what really got you to shift over and see the light?
Well, thanks for asking. I did come as a skeptic, as you can imagine, because I was trained in academic medicine, internal medicine in Boston, and then at the National Institutes of Health. But I heard in the early 1970s that there was an acupuncturist here in Washington, D.C. named Qing Wu, and he was able to get results in cases that all of our NIH scientists were not able to achieve. And then I heard about Dr. Ramamurthy Mishra, who wrote the textbook of yoga psychology and some commentary on Patanjali Sutra. Then I heard about Bhante Dharmawara, Cambodian Buddhist monk, most remarkable mindfulness practitioner and teacher and mentor. And I went to each of them with profound skepticism, but ended up basically sitting at their feet as a student. And then I had the remarkable good fortune for them to become my patient, because I am, after all, a doctor. So I have the world's smallest private practice. I really don't have a private practice. I really teach other colleagues how to do what we have found that works. But most of what I do today is what I learned outside of 8,000 hours in medical training.
Well, that's a lot of hours, man. A lot of hours. And, today's topic, what we wanted to talk about was rethinking health, the 8 predictive biomarkers, lifetime health. Now, first of all, please tell our listeners what are predictive health, or I should say predictive biomarkers?
Yes, a very important couple of common words, predictive and biomarkers. Now, biomarkers means tests that are functional. So they're tests that might actually be applicable to the individual. They're not just physical chemistry. They're not just old-fashioned tests. They really are biomarkers. And then we surveyed all the lab tests in the world looking for those tests that could be applied to individuals because of how widely they had been used and how well they've been validated and how clear the interpretation of results is. And so we add a novel rethinking, and that is that you want to have these biomarkers be at their best outcome goal value. You don't really care what the lab statistical range is because you're not a statistic, you're a person. And so we want people to know that there are just 8 tests out of all the bazillions that are out there. There are just 8 tests that cover all of epigenetics, all of lifestyle, all of the habits of daily living that you can do something about, which turns out to be, by the way, 92% of your lifetime health status. So the 92% that's epigenetic, that's lifestyle, that you can do something about is what we focus on. We do not focus on the 8% that is genetic, because I think that's still an emerging area of research and not yet a clinical area to be explored.
So, what I'm hearing is that every one of us can look at our 8 biomarkers, actually, so that it can actually determine your functional age, biological age. Am I correct?
Yes, indeed. So the first step is to do the correct test. The second step is to look at them in comparison to their best outcome goal value. For example, according to my birth certificate, I'm 70 plus. According to my functional testing, I'm 35 to 40. One of the teachers of mine that I mentioned, this fellow Bhante Dharmawara, who I mentioned, when he was 96 and then again when he was 106. We tested him extensively, and both times he came out functioning as a 40-year-old. And we put all this data in front of this elderly gentleman, and he looked at it and he said, 40? That's a good age.
Well, you know what? I always tell my patients, I want to go over 100. My grandmother, she passed away at 104, and I feel, you know, I would like the same form of vitality life. And for me, what you're telling me is that if we look and make sure that we're managing our lifestyle, the way we eat, the way we sleep, and really helping prevent the expression of damaging genetic issues, then we will definitely be able to live a lot longer. Now, I'd love to know which 8 predictive biomarkers are we talking about?
Yes, I'd be happy to tell you the 8 biomarkers, but I also want to underscore what you just said. Most of your quality of life today, the duration and how much suffering you will have, is determined by these 8 biomarkers, and these 8 biomarkers cover all of epigenetics, all of what you can do in terms of lifestyle. Now, what are they? The first has to do with sugar and the conversion of sugar into energy. It's a test most doctors do. It's called hemoglobin A1C. But the key is that you should be less than 5% in your hemoglobin A1C. The second test is a test of inflammation and repair ability. It's the high sensitivity C-reactive protein that's often spoken as HSCRP. That's the abbreviation, HSCRP. And you want the HS version, the high sensitivity version of the C-reactive protein, the HSCRP. And you want that value to be less than 0.5, indicating that you can repair and you're not in inflammation or repair deficit. The third test is homocysteine. That's an amino acid that we test on plasma. It's an important risk factor for heart, vascular disease, and stroke, but actually for all, it actually monitors detoxification, and so it's an all-cause morbidity mortality marker, as each of these are. And for homocysteine, you want to be less than 6. Then there's lymphocyte response assay by ELISA Act, measuring immune tolerance and intolerance. And you want your immune system to be tolerant. You want to be able to eat foods that you can digest, assimilate, and eliminate without immune burden. The fifth test is the urine pH after rest. This is a measure of whether you have too much acid or whether you're on the alkaline side, meaning you have enough minerals. And it's indirectly a test of magnesium in the cells. And we correct extra metabolic cellular acidosis by enhancing the uptake and chaperoning the delivery of magnesium through a novel approach that we pioneered. And then you have the sixth predictive biomarker, which is a correct vitamin D test, known as 25-hydroxy-D, and you want that 25-hydroxy-D to be in the healthy goal range of 50 to 80 to keep your bones young, to keep your joints flexible, to do all of the neurohormonal cell regulation that vitamin D really does. And then we have two more. We have number 7 is the omega-3 index. You want that to be more than 8% because you have a good balance of essential fats, good fats coming in. Omega-3 to omega-6 balance is measured by that test. And the last, the 8th one, is a urine test for damage in your DNA, and it's 8-oxoguanine. It's probably unusual to most people, so I'll spell it. It's 8-OXO-GUANINE, 8-oxoguanine. And it is a urine test. It can be done on spot urine because it's corrected to creatinine, and you want your value to be less than 25. So these are the 8 tests that measure the stresses and distresses of everyday living, and these are the tests that we can impact by changing our habits of daily living, what we eat, what we drink, what we think, and what we do.
Well, you know what? Let's go back real quick, because you did talk about the urine pH, and I remember... I just, you went through that a little bit quickly, because I want to know, is it Can anyone of us out there do using the pH sticks to see our pH? And what is the range that you recommend?
Yes. Now, you want to use a very specific pH strip. It's the high contrast 5.5 to 8 range, high contrast hydrion, H-Y-D-R-I-O-N. That's the name of the pH paper. And the healthy range is 6.5 to 7.5 after rest. The only time when you can clinically interpret urine pH is after the person has rested for 6 or more hours so that the urine in the bladder has equilibrated with the bladder lining cells. And so you're actually getting a measure of cellular metabolic acid excess known as cellular metabolic acidosis, also known as magnesium deficiency.
Very interesting. So, you know what? Of course, what's wonderful about this is that about you sharing about these biomarkers. I mean, most doctors don't do any of them. I would say that the hemoglobin A1C is the one that people do, the doctors do, as well as vitamin D. Now, they're starting to, mainstream doctors are starting to do it. But, pretty much the rest, you don't see that very often, unless you go to a cardiologist who'll look up the homocysteine and look at the hsCRP. So what I love about this whole thing that we're talking about is that you actually have the actual test. It's by PERC.
Yes.
I saw it on your website. But I want to ask you something, Dr. Jaffe. Can doctors, are the doctors the only one who can prescribe it? Can anyone out there who's listening order this test?
Right. There's two ways to get the test. One is through our professional channel, which is PERC Integrative Health, or PERC.com, PERQUE.com. That's the website. But the other way, for a consumer who wants to get access to their own testing and with an interpretation that we uniquely provide, they can go to BetterLabTestsNow.com, BetterLabTestsNow.com, and there they can get, it's a portal. It allows consumers to choose the test they want, and then we interpret them based on best outcome, not based on statistics.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, I appreciate what you're saying, because not only are you saying that these are the markers that we've got to look at, but also there's specific ranges, you know, because vitamin D, the range is from 30 to 100. And people who come
no,
into the
no,
office,
no, no, oh, my no, 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 no. Let me interrupt. Let me interrupt, if I may, Dr. Bennett. This is a very important point. While every laboratory provides a statistical range, sometimes called a normal range, it doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't apply to the individual. It would be better if you didn't have it. Ignore it. I can tell you that the Vitamin D Council agrees with our Health Studies Collegium Working Group on Vitamin D, agrees with Dr. Mike Hollick, Dr. Sunshine, that the healthy range for vitamin D, 25-hydroxy-D, the healthy range is 50 to 80. Now, some people will say 40 to 70, and I won't disagree, but I say 50 to 80, as do some others. And below 50, your rate of risk increases. If you're in the usual lab range, you're deficient. And there was just a very important article in the New York Times that said, because it is average, because it is, quote, normal statistic to have a low vitamin D level, then you don't need to supplement and you don't need to test because the country is low in vitamin D, but who cares? And that's basically what was published in the New York Times after an article that appeared in a medical journal. And I published a response, which you can find on our PERC.com website, which says, if you don't understand the basics of laboratory science and laboratory medicine, you will reach the opposite conclusion from the truth. And the truth is that the country is low in vitamin D, that drops under the tongue are the best way to get the vitamin D in reliably, because many people don't absorb vitamin D from their intestines because of maldigestion or enteropathy and a whole host of digestive problems. And so we specialize in results, in evidence-based and 21st century science applied to individuals, and ignore the lab range.
I'm so glad that you're saying that, because that's exactly what I was saying, is that the lab, the range of 30 being that it's normal is incorrect. in my practice, I shoot
it's statistically
4/7.
Normal.
That's
no. See, it's mathematically. I apologize for
that. Doesn't
for
mean clinically
you.
It's normal.
It is. It's mathematically. It's not clinically normal. It's people.
That's
it's a
right.
statistical term. It has to do with the statistics that they calculate on a group of people who are used as subjects. Their specimens are used as subjects for that test. It has nothing to do with the concept of common sense normal. A healthy range, the goal range, is what you want to pay attention to, and that's what you need to know. And for vitamin D, it's 50 to 80.
That's right. That's okay. So, like I said, it was 70 is what I shoot for, and I've seen people even they come in and even below 50. Once we get them above 50 range, their migraines get better, their headaches get better, their muscle pain and digestive system, their immunity. I mean, I can go on and on of why vitamin D is so important. So it's a great thing that you put that.
But we're in agreement that the goal is to be between 50 and 80.
Great. Very good. So now that we, once you do that, do you make any recommendations? Like you were saying, you've got people talking to you about that can help out our listeners if you do the test. Then do you make recommendations? How else can we help once people see that their markers are off?
Well, because Better Lab Test now is both a service and an interpretation bureau, we provide evidence-based interpretations based on best outcome goal values for each of the tests that are done and compare the individual to their best outcome goal value and then make recommendations of what they might have in excess that they would want to reduce. That's the burden of the toxins. And what they need more of than they're getting, for example, vitamin D. And the question that I'm usually asked is how much vitamin D should people take? And my answer is as much as they need. Notice I say as much as they need to get their value into the 50 to 80 range. And I highly recommend the form we pioneered, which is a drop you take under the tongue, because that gets in reliably before swallowing, whereas if you take it in any other form that depends upon intestinal uptake, given that over 40 million Americans have enough digestive problems to not be able to take vitamin D from their intestines, you're playing a kind of roulette that I don't think you should play. I think people should get their vitamin D reliably. I think they should take as much as they need to get into the 50 to 80 range, and then they should thank themselves for reducing their risk, thank their health professional or however they got to the information to get them into the 50 to 80 range. For me, that turns out to be about 15,000 units a day.
Can you repeat that, 15,000 units?
Yes. In order for my vitamin D to stay in the healthy 50 to 80 range, I take 15 drops. I take 15 drops of 500 units per drop. That's 7,500 units, and I do that twice a day. Total of 15,000 units, IU, is what helps me stay in the healthy range.
Right, right. You know, I live in Southern California, Los Angeles, and we're right at the level of 35 degrees in latitude. And I know for
yes.
sure, at least where I'm at, I can get sunlight. But you know what? Majority of America, the reason why we're so deficient is because we live in areas that we don't get enough sun. We have ultraviolet.
Let me build, Dr. Bennett, if I may, on the point you just made. If you look at Americans today, they spend 93% of their time indoors. They're only outside 7%
right.
of the time. And if you go outside, let me finish, please. If you go outside. And you're dressed. If you go outside and you're a lifeguard in Tel Aviv Beach or, you know, in a Mediterranean beach, it's a different story. But when most of us go outside with clothes on, only 8% of our skin is exposed. And then many people even wear skin block or sun block. So, yes, the sunlight, if you expose your whole body for enough time, you can generate healthy vitamin D through the skin. But only if you're out in the sun enough, and most people aren't. So your point is very well made. The country is deficient, and there's lots of reasons for it, but the country is deficient. And the country would be healthier, would be spending less, would be living longer, would be functioning better if all of us were within our 50 to 80 healthy range for vitamin D.
Right, right. Good point. Absolutely. You know, there was one market we also talked about that I find in my practice, I do it for everyone, is just much higher than your predictable marker range, and that is the hemoglobin A1C. You know, I'd like you to give us some tips on how to help individuals for that, because most of the time I see them above 5.5, and you suggest it to be below 5.0.
I absolutely know that the healthy range or value for hemoglobin A1C is less than 5%. I know that most of the people you see, Dr. Bennett, will be 5.5 to 6, but that means that the country, the United States of America, has 100 million pre-diabetics with metabolic syndrome today. They have trouble managing their weight. They don't get good restorative sleep. They don't feel as good in the afternoon. They have food and chemical allergies. They have impaired insulin function. All of this can be proven scientifically, and it's all rolled up into what your hemoglobin A1C value is. Now, how would I get someone who is stuck at 5.5 or 6? What I would do is the following. First of all, I would do the other biomarkers so that we can enhance metabolism based on the LRA by ELISA Act results. We can enhance cellular energy and protection based on the first morning urine pH and taking the magnesium and choline citrate. That will bring the magnesium back to the cell and improve the cell through the choline and the citrate. Then we can rebalance the essential fats by avoiding edible oils. You can cook with broth, you can cook with wine, you can cook with lots of things other than oil. And fried foods, I agree with the 2,000-year-old man Mel Brooks, stay away from fried foods. You don't need them. So if you really want to move someone to a healthy insulin function, if you really want to restore sugar conversion into energy, you have to do what I did for myself, because I had metabolic syndrome. I'll tell you another time how I got it, but I lost it, and I'm an example, and I'm like the reformed person who can, you know, talk from experience, because my weight is better. My metabolism is better. Most people are stuck at 5.5 to 6, which is a significant burden. It takes 25 years off their lifespan. It adds hundreds of thousands of dollars to their total cost of lifetime care. So there's lots of personal as well as social and policy reasons why we want people to be at a healthy hemoglobin A1C of less than 5%, based on eating what they can digest, assimilate, and eliminate without your burden, based on mindfulness practices so you're better adapted to stress, based on reducing the toxic load, 80% of which you have control of. This is the good news. Yes, we're marinating in a sea of toxins, but the good news is that 80% of it you have control of. 80% of it is short-lived. It comes in and goes out. So if you just stop it coming in and it goes out on its own, or you enhance it going out through our biological detoxification program with physiology before prescriptions and medicine, you often find you don't need the prescriptions. I myself, as a practicing physician, have not written a prescription in decades, because I don't need to do that, because physiology works when you apply it personally and productively.
Oh, well said, well said. You talked a lot about the epigenetics right there. You know, how we live our lives, how we what we put into our body, our exposure to the environment, all of that. Is there one thing that you'd like to tell our listeners right now? Because we just got a couple more minutes left for a takeaway.
Yeah.
How can we improve our lives?
The takeaway is that your life is in your control. The takeaway is that your habits of daily living, what you eat, drink, think, and do, determine the quality of your life today and the duration of your life tomorrow. What we want you to do is know, through your health professional who has been trained by us, to rethink health with physiology first and what we call predictive primary prevention, that is personalized, promotive of health, not just suppressive of symptoms, and really evidence-based. So come join us in the 21st century, where it is toxic, where it is stressful, where things have been kind of reshuffled, if you will. But know that it is the time to choose life and health, that you do that with physiology before pharmacology, and you do that by eating a diet you can digest, assimilate, and eliminate without immune burden, by keeping your biomarkers at their healthier value. And together, we can actually thrive even in this stressful time.
I love everything that you just said right there. So, Dr. Jaffe, where can we find more about you, your information about this, the biomarker predictive biomarker testing? Please tell us that before we leave.
Yes, and thanks for asking. DrRussellJaffe.com is a website, and on that website, you can elect three things to download that will help you to survive the 21st century, to rethink health, and to choose life.
Well, fantastic. Thanks so much. Great information. We've got to get going here, but I'd love to have you come back again and talk more about the not just about what we're talking about, but even maybe possibly about the genetic factors, the epigenetic factors that impact our lives. I've put the information on Wellness for Life radio page on Radio MD. Now, until next time, go out there and have the best life, full of energy, enthusiasm, and ultimate wellness today. This is Dr. Suzanne sharing natural health strategies on the Wellness for Life show right here on Radio MD. Stay well.